Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Before we get started with today's episode, I'm really excited to tell you about Shadow, who are kindly sponsoring this episode. You probably already know that I relish my time offline, and one of my favourite habits during my weekly digital detoxes is to read and really take my time with it. Now, this obviously includes books, but this year it's also extended to reading magazines, and one of my favourite publications is by Shadow. Shadow are an experience-led community who use arts, journalism, and activism to unite people around social change. And in case you're wondering, Shadow is an acronym for See, Hear, Act, Do. All of their work is rooted in self-representation, and their goal is to help achieve culture-led system change through centering the voices of frontline communities. Their stunningly illustrated biannual print magazine is so well put together, and I think it would make an exceptional gift. I particularly enjoyed the climate justice issue, which I think all the Small Things listeners would love. So if this sounds appealing, head to shadow-mag.com/shop. And do be sure to check out their Instagram, which is @shadow.mag, where they post all their online articles, calls to action, and details of their upcoming events. Hello and welcome back to the show. Venetia here. It has been a little while since the last episode and I have really missed you. I am super excited to be back with one final episode bringing season 3 to a close. If you've enjoyed the series, it would mean the world to me if you could give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, or you could share the episode on your social media, tagging me at Venetia Lamanna and tagging the show at ATST Podcast. Many of the issues we discuss on All the Small Things come back to the theme of love, which is why I am just delighted to be bringing you today's episode with journalist, author, and absolute gem of a human, Natasha Lunn. Natasha Lunn's Conversations on Love began life as a much adored newsletter with 10,000 subscribers, focusing on a wide range of issues intimately connected to love, before turning into a 16-way publishing bid and a Sunday Times top 10 best-selling book. In this exceptional book, Natasha draws on her own loves and losses and speaks to a wide array of authors and experts to learn about their experiences, asking, how do we find love? How do we sustain it? And how do we survive when we lose it? This book features interviews with some incredible people, including Juno Dawson, Roxane Gay, Dolly Alderton, Candice Carty-Williams, and Esther Perel. I found myself frantically underlining most of the book before realizing that I really should invite Natasha on the podcast, and I'm delighted to say that she agreed and to be bringing you this conversation. Conversations on Love is easily one of my favorite books from this year. I can't stop recommending it, and I think you will love it. In the meantime, if you're yet to read it, I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Natasha, I am so excited to have you on All the Small Things today, closing season 3. Thank you so much for being here. First, let us start as we always do. I'd love to hear if you have any kind of morning routine or small rituals that you like to practice when you wake up to kind of set the tone for your day.
Well, I have a young baby, so whether or not that the intention for this manages to hold firm or not, I don't know. But my morning thing that I do every day is, especially if I'm feeling a bit sad or I can't get out of bed, or even if I've had a sleepless night with my baby and I come downstairs with her and it's a bit depressing, I always just put on a song. Like at the moment, it's Cruel Summer by Taylor Swift, or just one song which I love to dance to, and it just changes the mood of the morning. So I feel like that's quite a powerful change to the beginning of the day.
I love that. I'd love to hear a little bit about your childhood and your family life and the things that really made you feel loved when you were growing up.
My parents are so in love with each other. And I think that just from a very young age, very expressive of that love to each other and to us. So we're very, you know, we're not shy about telling each other we love each other all the time and hugging and being very OTT, I guess, about love in our family. So I grew up with that real openness about feelings and emotions and sex, actually, which sometimes I could have done without possibly as a teenager. And now I come to appreciate a bit more. My parents had us really young, about 23. They definitely had that 80s approach to parenting. Like, we'd just take the kids with us everywhere, like to every party they went to. We just were underneath the table playing, and to every like wild holiday with like loads and loads of their friends. I felt like I belonged at home. And certainly times when I was older and things would be going wrong, or I would be getting rejected, or I would feel I really messed up, I did always have that sense of, well, I can just go back home and I'll be loved and everything is okay there. Like around that kitchen table, no matter what I've done that's shameful or bad, I can go and sit there and dance with my mum and I know that I will be loved. So I feel, yeah, just to have a parent who loves you is something we take for granted, isn't it? And it is a great love story.
Absolutely. And your book has really, really helped me appreciate that parental love more than ever before, actually. So before we start talking about the book, I'd love for listeners to hear about what made you start the newsletter Conversations on Love and how quickly you realized that it would make a good book.
Well, I started the newsletter, ironically, for somebody who thought that they've been obsessed with love for years and years, just realizing that I knew really very little about it. And particularly falling into a romantic relationship and meeting my partner, just so much of what I've assumed about a romantic relationship was not how it actually was. You know, starting a relationship is a real beginning. And I think I had always seen it as an ending. When we're single, we talk a lot about the importance of, like, you know, being independent and putting love into friendship and all these other places, and realizing that that is just as important when you're in a romantic relationship, and that you need so many different people to see you in all these different ways. And I guess I realized that I'd had quite an egotistical approach to love, and I've been very focused on finding somebody to love me, and I hadn't invested any time in figuring out how I could love better. You know, I guess part of it as well is growing older and realizing that things are going to get more difficult, and there are going to be periods of disconnection with family, with friends, in romantic relationships, and thinking, okay, well, I've got to this very lucky point in my life where I have these people who I love. How can I get better at that? And how can I make sure that I'm not overlooking all of the different love I have, was the starting point. And then, to be honest with you, the thought of writing a book about it filled me with dread, because it's something you can't really pin down into words. Like, you can never, ever sum up what love is on the page, I don't think. And so I just thought it was impossible. I was like, you can't write a book about this. What are you going to say in the final page? You know, what's the answer? There is no answer. And I think finding meaning in that mystery and actually trying to explore these topics whilst knowing that you can never really reach a finishing line is kind of what loving is. And so I tried to make the book echo that mystery in a way. And I felt like that was a meaningful way to do it.
Absolutely was. Honestly, it is easily one of my favorite books that I've read this year and over the past few years. I just cannot stop talking about it and recommending it. The thing I love in particular about the book is how it places emphasis on different kinds of love, from strangers, which is something that I talked about with Hassan Akkad earlier in the season, how these moments of kindness from strangers really lifted him and helped him on his journey. Why do you think that remembering and knowing that there are different kinds of loves that can really help us in all different stages of our lives is something that so many of us have to kind of relearn and unlearn? And why do you think it's helping us lead fulfilled lives?
I'm thinking specifically of the people in my life. Like, for example, my husband works in a primary school. He's not really interested in writing or writers or journalism, or he reads but very different books to what I read, and he's not going to be there talking about bell hooks dying and talking about her work or something like that. But I don't need him to be that for me, because I have friends who I will have those conversations with and who see those parts of me and I see those parts of them. And if I say didn't have those friends, maybe I would feel really frustrated. When you don't have those different people who can engage with different sides of you, you can maybe run the risk of loading all that expectation onto one person. And inevitably life changes and people are busier or less busier at different points and move to different places and have different personal struggles, and they might not be able to give you the level of time or connection at that intensity all the time. Certainly for me, having lots of different friends maybe allows me to give my friends a bit of a break when perhaps they need to be distant, because I'm not relying on them for absolutely everything. So when we sort of put, you know, particularly romantic love on a pedestal above everything else, it just puts a lot of pressure on that one relationship to deliver all of our happiness, which of course is just impossible for one person. And also it's not just other people, but understanding there's a level of responsibility we have for our own happiness too, rather than looking to a romantic relationship to answer all those problems for us or to fix something or to ease loneliness and make us feel happy forevermore. Which I think is, you know, certainly how I, and I think a lot of other people I've interviewed have felt growing up, I will be unhappy if I'm not in a relationship, and just that fear of being alone and seeing that as the only answer to being alone, when actually you can find connection in lots of different places.
I definitely felt pretty overwhelmed, but in the most wonderful way, when I went through my kind of biggest breakup of my 20s, because I just realized how much my friends were there for me, and it really solidified so many of my friendships. Through this breakup, I realized that I had so many deep loves, and not only deep loves with my friends and the women in my life, but also love that's very romantic. I do really feel like friendship can be just as romantic as the romance that we get from our partners. So I was wondering if you had ever experienced romance in some of your friendships, and if you could tell us about that.
Completely. And, you know, if I think about Valentine's days, I remember the ones with my friends. You know, there's one where I was actually like, my friend was crying in a pub on Valentine's Day, and we were both in not a great place, but it was just this real moment of vulnerability and connection and kind of showing up there and thinking, well, everything is crap, but we're here and we can laugh about it together. I think that's a form of romance too. But yeah, I think like those little things you do for friends, of handwritten cards that you send each other, or I was even thinking about, you know, hen do's are trite, but I didn't really have one. I just had people come round for margaritas, cocktails and pizzas. My friends had all like taken a photo and written like the story of the memories with us. And I was just looking through it and thinking, these are such moments of love that I remember now and feel great nostalgia and romance about. Even jewelry, like now I'm, you know, I'm wearing a bracelet that's one of my best friends given to me that's engraved, and I haven't taken it off, that I wear every day, like I wear my wedding ring every day. It's just a little reminder. I guess where I'm at now with romance and friendships is knowing that I have to be a bit more conscious about those romantic gestures. When we were younger, I mean, just having more time and perhaps seeing each other more often. And as you are less able to do that, particularly people moving hours and hours away or even sometimes different countries, I have learned to send more letters in the post, and I have learned to, you have to almost make the milestones, because maybe there aren't anniversaries in the same way, and maybe there aren't those societal markers. So you have to sort of make them up yourself. So I would say romance now has to be more active for me in those friendships. And I'm always trying to think of ways to do that. A therapist actually said to me the other day, she calls them placeholders. So even if you can't be there, it's just sending a note or something that says, I love you, I'm so sad I can't be there, but you're in my mind today and I'm remembering this about you. Or just those little quiet acts of love, I think, become much more important.
I have definitely noticed the start of the shift that I think you're referencing and also that you wrote about in the book, because I am at a stage now where a couple of my friends have started to have babies. I don't live in London anymore, so I've missed out on a couple of the get-togethers with my kind of core group of girlfriends recently. And I do think that that shift is quite difficult. If other people are listening who are in that kind of similar shift, what kind of words of comfort would you have for them? I guess what I'm also saying is there also has to be an acceptance that these friendships will change.
I had dinner with a friend recently who is maybe thinking that she might not want children. And she said to me and another friend, oh, you guys have become really close because you're parents. And I said to her, I love that we don't talk about kids. I love my friends who are mothers, and there is something amazing about saying, okay, they've got this temperature. What is, you know, there is bonding. But at the same time, I'm so treasure those friendships where I can go and not be a mother and inhabit the other side of myself and be seen for the part of me that's still separate to that, which is still there. So I would say to anyone listening, I was worried when I was younger that, okay, if I wasn't on exactly the same timescale as my friends, then I would lose that friendship. And I just have found that that is not the case. Yes, there are some like things that make it really difficult, but I suppose I've learned to get much more relaxed about how those friendships ebb and flow. And certainly friends of mine who had kids a lot younger than I did, we did have periods of distance, but we sustained those friendships enough that now they kind of become closer again. For me, I wouldn't say that the situation has determined the quality of the friendships. The friendships that are really good and that we keep, like, I guess, making an effort to be vulnerable and honest with each other, those withstand difference. And actually, as someone said to me in the book, you know, if you only ever make friends as people who are in the same situation as you, then you're not going to have any friends at the end of the day, because it's just going to keep coming in waves all the time. Different levels of loss, different challenges in our relationships and our own health, and all this career stuff all the time is changing. So many different parts of our lives. So I think we have to get a bit better at being flexible and just finding ways to sustain the gaps. For me, I guess the difference is now knowing when to be a bit relaxed about that distance and cut someone some slack and say, okay, it's okay if we don't see each other that often in this year, and then when to say, hang on a second, it's been too long, what are we going to do about this?
Yeah, that's super helpful, thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
One of the most prominent themes in the book, which I absolutely adored, is how important it is to notice the small moments with loved ones. So you reference kind of how important it is, for example, if you're with your parents, to not be staring at a screen, which is something that I know that I do when I'm with my mum, and she is the person who deserves that the least because she would never do that with me. What ways did your conversations with the people that you interviewed in the book impact how you spend time with the people that are closest to you?
Well, with the screens thing, it wasn't just that I'm bad at being on my phone all the time. It was, and I was thinking about this at Christmas time, is the feeling of going home and being like, I don't have a boyfriend. You know, I must have a boyfriend for this time next year, or just not being able to really be happy with just my family and texting a boy under the table and just, I guess, always being half there is how I felt. Perhaps also when you're younger, you are more egotistical and distracted, and you do almost have to pull away from your family a little bit and make your own life in order to come back again, I think. But I would say I get a lot of people through the newsletter writing to me as well about loss, and that has given me a sense. We can kind of, I guess, trick ourselves into feeling invincible and love that the people are going to be there forever. And I guess I lost that feeling from this project. I don't now take for granted that everyone I love is going to be there until I'm 93. That sense of an awareness of loss has made me just want to almost collect details of people, you know, knowing that things that irritate me now about so many people, like my mum calling WhatsApp WhatsApp, or I don't know, stupid little details. I know that one day I'll be there dying to smell Clarins moisturizer on her skin, or, you know, these tiny details of people that when they're not there will feel so precious to us, and then when they're here we just don't notice them. And of course you can't go around living like that, worrying about everyone dying all the time, but I think if we could do that almost just half of the time, then we'd be better at just giving love the attention it deserves. And I don't know about you, but I've definitely been guilty of, like, with my work, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to write a to-do list and I'm going to get things done and I'll set these goals and I'll review everything in every 6 weeks and then I'll have an appraisal and all this kind of work we do naturally about reviewing and planning and noticing and I guess improving that we don't do in our relationships. Like, you know, even Esther Perel said maybe we should have like a little summit every 6 weeks where you go away with someone and you say, right, what are you happy about? What are you pissed off about? What can we do better? I do this thing now. I do it actually with two friends and I do it with my husband. We call it like circle of life, and we divide it into four sections, which is like health, friends, family, actually work is in there as well. And we kind of write down like the things that we're unhappy with and the things that we've really been happy about, and then look at what we can maybe do differently. And that does involve thinking about the small moments with people, because like love is a big, vast, unknowable thing, but it's built on small details. It's built on how you walk your way back from a fight, or the kind thing you do or don't say, or the card that you remember to send to a friend, like all those little things. Without them, love is just a feeling. And as many people who I've interviewed told me, like, feeling sadly is not enough to sustain a relationship. And you were asking how the interviews change. The line I keep coming back to is the Esther Perel said, if somebody tells them that they love their partner, she'll be like, well, how do you demonstrate it? Like, it's no good just feeling that love. Like, how are you gonna show up for someone? How are you gonna show them that you had the intention to do that? So I try and almost carry that line around like a little talisman. My husband and I say this all the time, that we'll be apart in the day and thinking, oh, I really want to see you. And then when we get home, we'll just snap about something, and then the other person will never know that you had that loving feeling, because you get home and you're just cranky. And so often we'll say, oh, it's so weird that I'm snapping at you, because earlier today I was really thinking how much I love you. And so I guess it's just finding a way to act on that feeling.
Yeah, it is a complicated time of the year for a lot of people. It's the holidays, and if you celebrate Christmas, it's coming up to Christmas. I think we are fed a narrative that this should be an especially loving, romantic time of year, but for so many it can be absolutely awful and it can feel incredibly lonely. Why do you think this is such a complicated time for so many people? And if we are one of those people, how do you think we can kind of help ourselves feel less anxious and less alone?
Well, for me, the reason I found it hard is I think I did always use it as a marker of like, where's my life at and what do I not have? When I was younger, as I said, like going back to my parents and feeling that I wanted a relationship. And I don't know why, but I would always get dumped just before Christmas. And when I was trying to get pregnant, being like, okay, another Christmas when I don't have a baby. And possibly because we have resolutions in the new year and we're trained to reflect back on everything. And for me, that was always what I hadn't done or what I hadn't got rather than being grateful. And that was just the trap that I fell into. And I think the trap that a lot of us can fall into, because it is an opportunity to be with people. So if you see that you don't have the people who you want in your life, that can feel like a lack. But, you know, now I really see, like, there's something Alain de Botton was saying about loneliness and saying, like, why do you feel more lonely on a Friday night than you would on a Monday night? It's not really because you're unhappy being alone for those 6 hours or whatever it's on the night. It's the story that you're telling yourself about what a Friday night means in comparison to what a Monday night means. And with Christmas, I think maybe we just need to change the story and set our expectations a little bit lower, even with family. You know, I actually think, was it last year was my first Christmas as a new parent? And as much as I was so grateful to have a baby, there was also a sense of loss of thinking, oh, we can't sit and have dinner with our family in the evening because we were upstairs, you know, holding the baby. We couldn't just sit there and have drinks. We couldn't have carols. And so I think that I've just learned to accept that, like any other day, or like a birthday, or like a wedding, or all these other things that we put on pedestals, there might be beautiful and amazing and meaningful bits, and there might also be bits that are a bit boring, or bits that are a bit irritating, or bits that are a bit frustrating. And so even past me looking at those new mothers as having absolutely everything I ever wanted, and their life was so perfect and happy, and I was miserable and alone. Well, the truth is that I had fun those years as well, and I had sad bits, and possibly the people who were new mothers had tough bits and beautiful bits as well. You know, and going back to the friendship thing again, I sort of found it quite difficult to be friends with new mothers when I was struggling to conceive. And I hadn't really stopped to think, well, they also might be lonely, and those friends also might be in need of company or of support. I had sort of put them in the box, like their lives are happy and mine are not. And I think that we can have the tendency to do that when we're in the middle of longing for something.
I think this is honestly one of the things that your book achieves so well. It's this kind of zooming out and looking at things in a different way to what we might have been taught or conditioned to. And for that reason, that zooming out and that kind of greater understanding of what it is we're all going through, loss, you know, love, all of this stuff, I just found so, so helpful. So I know you say what an impossible thing to write about, but I really do think you've nailed it.
I think that what you're saying about the zooming out, it comes back to ego, doesn't it? And if I think about all my own issues in love, whilst at the time I was like, oh, it was this person who didn't love me, it was this person's fault, a lot of it was just I was so egotistical in my approach to love, and always thinking, why me, and not catching myself before I veered into self-pity. And maybe that's part of youth, but I think it certainly took me a longer time than it should have done to grow out of that. Feeling isolated from other people is an easy feeling to kind of trip back into. And for me, that's why Conversations on Love has been so amazing, because there's a writer called Sarah Hoppola who says, like, our default state is quite cranky, egotistical, overlooking people, lazy, and all of us need reminders to kind of zoom out or to get better at prioritizing giving love and gratitude and all those things. Some people have gratitude journals, and some people go running, and some people meditate. And I think for me, maybe it's stories and listening to other people. And even today, I was sort of frustrated about, you know, possibly with my partner, like, he's sick. It's not his fault, but I'm like, oh God, I've got to do solo childcare. And I was like hoping to get this writing done this weekend, and just like, of course this is not his fault, but I'm there being a bit resentful. And I just was reading one of the conversations, and it just sort of trips me out of it and reminds me how much of love is about self-regulation and kind of catching yourself before you react impulsively.
It's definitely a book that I'm going to be coming back to lots. I would love to hear about how being a mother to Joni has changed you.
People make all these assumptions, like, I think there's so many parts of me that haven't changed and are the exact same and making all the same mistakes and not being this sort of always compassionate, devoted being that I think sometimes mothers are portrayed as. Sometimes I look at her and I think, what have I done to myself? Because it's so scary. I think it's made me a lot more scared. I write in the book about a moment when she was sick and she was in this ambulance, and they put this kind of mask over her, and I almost couldn't be in my body in that moment. And it's strange because it's so physical and it's so demanding and it's so difficult and it's so scary. So sometimes I think, God, what have I done to myself? But in a wonderful way, it's really just another reminder of how wonderful it can be to give love. And the kind of thinking about when I was younger again and just obsessing over when will someone love me, and just this idea of being loved being the most amazing feeling. In the beginning with the baby, you're not getting that much back apart from them being like delicious and cute and wonderful, because they can't talk. You know, they just demand things of you all the time. And it just reminds me how rewarding it is to keep giving love. And also reminds me that nothing good in life that has happened to me has been easy. It's really, really difficult, but that doesn't mean that it can't be wonderful. And I'm starting to think that maybe all of love is like that, but maybe romantic relationships are not just as easy as I thought. Like, it's so difficult. There's so many moving pieces in some ways. And I think that's what makes it amazing. Like, when I look at my husband now, I think, oh, I see the time that you have cried in my arms, or I see the moment when I'm like throwing up in the loo and you're shitting and we're trying to look after a baby, so we've both got the norovirus. All these layers of like difficulty and struggle on top of the easy, blissful moment make this complex, layered, deep love. That's what creates something so special. But I mean, I'm in the early stages. I'm still figuring it out, making many, many mistakes.
Love that. How would you feel about a quick fire round?
Go for it.
Quick fire with Natasha. Wake up early or have a lion?
Have a lion, which I haven't had for a very long time, so definitely have a lion.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Meditation or yoga?
Yoga.
Marmite or jam?
Marmite.
In the trees or by the sea?
By the sea.
Christmas or New Year?
Christmas.
Elf or Home Alone?
Home Alone.
Love Actually or The Holiday?
Love Actually.
Paris or New York?
Paris.
Fiction or non-fiction?
Non-fiction.
Podcasts or Netflix?
I'll say podcast. Can you tell I'm a people pleaser? Sunset.
And finally, routine or spontaneity?
Routine, sadly. I find routine reassuring.
Final few questions. I'd love to hear, what is your one non-negotiable daily self-care habit?
Always going and buying a takeaway coffee. Like, I'd rather sacrifice anything else than that one thing of going to the coffee shop and having a coffee made for me.
It's just the best moment of the day. Unfortunately, I don't live somewhere now where there's good coffee close by.
It's not particularly great, but I don't know why. It's something about the ritual of it. Also, getting up, getting dressed, going out, particularly in lockdown, became so important. So yeah, definitely that.
What have you read, listened to, or watched recently that you'd love to recommend?
I have just read Foreverland by Heather Havrilesky. It's a memoir about a marriage. And I guess I am really drawn to stories about what happens like after you get together, you know, a bit like Before Midnight. I don't know if you've seen that in the third of the trilogy. Like, we have so many stories about falling in love. And I always love reading and watching things about the next bit. And this really is about the next bit. It's about what it takes to be in a long-term relationship. It's about fights. It's about periods of disconnection, how you find your way back to each other. And it's really honest in a way that I don't think many people are able to be when writing about long-term relationships. So I love that. And it's out actually in February. So I really recommend that.
Amazing. Awesome. And finally, what is one thing you hope your future self will have achieved?
I hope my future self will just have been able to pay attention to the love that she had on that day, rather than looking to love in the future, plans for the future.
That's so lovely.
This is my eternal struggle. And yeah, thank you for that, because it's a reminder to me to try and do that today.
That is so beautiful. You really do have such an amazing way with words. And thank you so, so much again for writing this book and for bringing these conversations into just such a wonderful read and reminder. I'm very, very grateful.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for reading so closely and for your generous questions.
Thank you so much for listening to this season finale. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you have any suggestions of people you'd like to hear me interview on this podcast, or any books that you think I should be reading to inspire the podcast, please send me a direct message at ATSTpodcast. On a personal level, I just want to say a huge thank you for your support on this podcast this year. It truly does mean the world to me that you choose to tune in and spend this time with me and my guests. It has been an utter joy bringing you conversations with people who I find deeply inspiring. Wishing you a restful holidays and a nourishing new year, and sending you loads of love.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.